Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Camera Work Podcast. And you know, I'm not even sure of the number. I think it's 28, but I'm not sure because we did this one really off the cuff. Because today I've got a special guest and I like just asked him literally like 30 seconds ago, man, you got to do the podcast. And he was like, okay. So here we are doing it. Now, the guest is Neil Zlozauer. Now, did I pronounce that correctly?
You did it great. Sounds right. Good, John.
And to me, I don't know how you consider yourself in photography, what you would consider your legacy, but to me, you're like a legendary photographer because I taught high school for 10 years while I was a photographer. So I always admired certain photographers who were just doing great work, like photographically and getting great shoots with people. And you were one of the people that I would look at doing like Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses and stuff. So how do you look at your legacy? Do you look at yourself as a legend in photography or just like a working guy?
What? That's a funny question. Yeah, I'm a legend in my right hand is what I am. No, you know what? That's just what I do for a living. Some people, hold on a second. Come on in, Victor. Hold on.
Yeah, come on in. Don't worry. We got, see, this is real, guys. We got like people coming in. I don't know if we're going to be able to keep Neil. I don't know.
Continue this in a while.
Okay, we may not be able to continue this. That's really too bad. So what's happening right now is Neil is shooting an ad, I believe. I'm not sure what company. And he's doing like three bass players. And I think the first one just arrived. So I'm not sure where we're going to end up podcast-wise. So we'll see in a couple of minutes if we're going to be able to do it or if we're not going to be able to do it.
John, you asked me what I thought about my my legend or whatever, however you put it, about my... what did you say?
Like your legacy, or how do you look at yourself?
I don't. You know, right. Listen. Some guys are born; they work at a gas station. Some guys restore cars. I just, you know, I'm a photographer. I shoot people in the music industry. That's sort of what I do. Yeah. You know?
Right. Now, there were two things that I admired about you when I knew your work in the '80s, and like I said, I was a part-time photographer. So when you're part-time, you study it even more because you're like admiring people, and you want to be at that point where you can be full-time, like someone like yourself. But there were two things in particular. One was that you were taking good photographs, which not everyone who is successful does. Like you did like that Motley Crue blood thing, correct?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite shoots I ever did. That was a lot of fun.
Right. And then the second thing that I always admired is that you had a personal, as far as I could tell, you had a personal relationship with a lot of groups. So how did that happen? Like Van Halen, is that a good example of a group?
Yeah, well, you know, what you try to do when you're a photographer is start with the people when they're nobodies and then, you know, grow with them. Because once a band's big, like whoever, Van Halen or Motley Crue, all the parasite, maggot, leech photographers come out of the woodwork and want to work with them. But you have to have the insight and sort of have the ear to go, this band's going to be great. I want to work with them. You got to catch them when they're nobodies and work your way up the ladder with them.
The weird thing is that for the most part, when I see a photographer, a young photographer who tries that approach, I'm usually trying to say, hey, that might work, but don't bank on it. Because I always go, when the band gets successful, they're going to eat in better restaurants, they're going to bang better looking chicks, they're going to drive better cars, and they're going to be working with different photographers. It's, you know what I'm saying? But when they get to the cover of Rolling Stone, Mark Seliger shoots it, not the guy that shot them at CBGB's.
Right. Well, that's true,
but you
too.
You violated that. That didn't.
Well, you know, that's because I taught most of them all their bad habits, you know. They learned a lot of stuff from me that they liked learning, but... you know, I try to hang with the band. I mean, if you said to me, look, you can give up being a photographer and never shoot another picture, or you had to give up listening to music for the rest of your life and could never put another CD on or something, I mean, that would be an easy choice for me. It'd be give up photography because I can't live without music. So I listen to music from the second I wake up and I'm in the shower till basically when I go to sleep and I'm working all night at home. I got music cranking. So, right. You know, I love music. I feel it. I live it. And, you know.
But getting back to the personal thing with the bands, how far did that extend? Let's take Van Halen as an example.
Okay.
When did you first come across Van Halen?
I heard Van Halen in 78. Their first album was already out. I was working in an office with some other photographers. I heard Running with the Devil. I'm like, holy shit, this is good stuff. I mean, you know, we were coming off the disco era, so it was Saturday Night Fever and the Village People and Donna Summers and all that, and that really wasn't my cup of tea because I'm sort of a rock and roller. Then all of a sudden on the radio, I heard Van Halen. I'm like, oh my God, listen to this singer. He's like raw and nasty. Right. And then that song went into Eruption, and You Really Got Me, and I was hooked. I'm like, this band's gonna be...
How did you actually meet the band, though?
Well, I knew their publicists at the time. So like I said, whether it was Ted Nugent or Aerosmith or whoever it was, the first time I heard a band and they sort of kicked my ass and I said, I want to work with them. I made a point. Back then you could, you know, more or less the bands were a lot more accessible than they are now. You know, now you got publicists saying you can't do this, you can't do that. Everybody's trying to keep you away from the band. But back then it was a lot easier. So
right. Were you keeping, let's say, stay with Van Halen for a second. Were you keeping the relationship with them strictly photographic? Like, were you ever hanging out with them?
No, we were all hanging. We were all getting drunk and picking up chicks and everything. I mean, I'd be in my apartment. I hear a, you know, knock on my front door. Yeah, who is it? Hey, Slows, it's Dave. Or, you know, Eddie would come and pull his Jeep. He had a CJ5 at the time. He'd pull his Jeep right on my front lawn. I'd open the door, and there'd be Eddie with his Jeep right on my front lawn. So we were all, you know, one big happy family. They weren't that big in 78, you know.
Right. Now, how hard is it, though, to be doing business with them? Because at the same time, you're still trying to make money shooting them, correct?
Well, you
were
know,
you that conscious of that, or were you just thinking, these are my boys and I'm shooting them for
these
free?
Are my we were friends, and, you know, we did business together. But, you know, I try to... You know, there's a fine line, like when you're backstage with the band and whether there's booze being drank or there's naked girls or there's drugs being consumed, I try to put, at least for the drugs, you know, put my camera down. With the naked girls, I'll usually pick my camera up, you know. Right. But
now, how much stuff do you have in the files that you have not published along that line? Do you have stuff like that that you've shot that we have never seen?
Well, of bands or of bands with drugs and booze and
girls?
No,
that's what I mean. The bands doing the stuff that the publicist doesn't want us to see.
I got some. You know, it's sort of a triply X-rated and things people, you know, we really couldn't easily publish in any American magazines.
Right.
But
is your house listed on, like, Google address? Like, we can go find it and raid your house and find all the
slides?
Stuff's
not at my house. It's hidden away in my studio, and I'm such a slob, no one could ever find it anyway, even though I'm an organized slob.
Right. That sounds like a challenge, right? Now, talk about the crew for a second. That's another group that you had a personal relationship with. Is that correct?
Yeah, Nikki. Well, I was friends with all the guys, but myself, Nikki, and Robin Crosby, we had a little more camaraderie going on back in the 83 and 84. So, you know, I think everybody knows about our famous tales about us going to Martinique in the Caribbean, causing, you know, turbulence and destruction and all that stuff on the island. So.
Right, and you remained a fan of the music at the same time that you were shooting groups like that?
Yeah, well, you know, I work with bands that I like the people and don't necessarily listen to the music. I mean, some of the people I'm closest with, I really don't even listen to their music, and I'm not going to name any names because they may think I listen to their music, but, you know, there's people I like, and then there's people I shoot and people I like and shoot, so.
Right. Now, how conscious of you when you were shooting some of that stuff that it was like historical documents in terms of metal? Were you,
know,
you conscious of that at all?
No, back then, I mean, let's take it back to the 70s. I mean, you know, I used to go shoot The Who and the Rolling Stones and Rod Stewart and Led Zeppelin. And back then, you know, no one ever knew that 30, 40 years down the line, the photos were going to be a valuable commodity and, you know, going to be worth money. I mean, you know, I sell prints to collector for, you know, anywhere from this much money to this much, not on right. eBay for $2 a picture. I don't right. do that. But, you know, but if I knew back then in the 70s, because we were more careless being photographers, we were more careless about getting our original slides back.
Oh, God, you'd send out slides and then you wouldn't get them back.
No.
Or they'd send back 10% of them and you just right. kind of let it go.
Right, because we didn't know, you know. Yeah. And the thing is, a lot of magazines like Cream Magazine, which was a big magazine in the 70s and early 80s, they went bankrupt about three times. Well, when a magazine goes bankrupt, they don't have enough money to FedEx your slides, so they just throw them in the trash. You know?
Right. Yeah, you know, there's two for me. I shot Pearl Jam at Wetlands on their first album, right. and I shot a thing with Paul and Gene from Kiss where we went to, like, the Loft on 23rd Street and all these spots in Manhattan that were famous in Kiss history.
Right.
And I don't have either one of those things because magazines never gave it back.
Are you sure it's because Gene and Paul never gave it back to you? You know, with
they
Kiss?
They never had it.
You okay, know? You're lucky, because if you ever gave it to them, you wouldn't get it back anyway. Right. So
now let me ask you one more music question before okay. I get to a little more photography. Right, so was there a group that you thought really should have broke big that didn't?
Well, I thought the band I managed, Floor, should have been big. Unfortunately,
what were
the
they
timing
called?
Well, I gave my hand.
No, what was the band called?
It was called Floor. It was some okay. four guys I knew and sort of met by accident. I didn't even know they were in a band, and gave me a CD, never listened to it. I put it on one day, and all of a sudden I'm like, this is good. And I put it on again right after. I probably listened to it 8 times the first time I ever put it on. And right. then all of a sudden I called him. I tried to find the guys. I couldn't find them. I called everybody I knew trying to find them. And then all of a sudden I looked on the CD for more information. Call this
there
number.
Was. So they had their act together, apparently.
Yeah, so, you know, we did a few shows, and I got all my friends, like, I think Vi came down, and Billy Sheehan, and David Lee Roth came down, and Warren DeMartini, right. and Samba. That's a whole nother story.
Right, but you it know. Never broke huge, right?
No, and we got to take a break.
Oh, God. Because remember, we're here. We're doing an actual shoot. And,
yeah, we're working, so you got to excuse us. We're doing this between.
Yeah, he's on a real shoot today, so hopefully I can get him back by the end of this thing, okay? So when I looked through, you did at least 2 books, right? You did a Van Halen book and a Motley Crue book, correct?
And another Eddie Van Halen book and a Guitar Gods book and a Fuck You book.
Oh, cool. I didn't see all of those then.
Yeah, but well, I guess you were sleeping.
I must be. But one of the things I kind of wonder, like when you're with a group like, say, Motley Crue, where, what was the first time you shot them? What album is that?
Well, the first time I shot them was right before Shout at the Devil came out. It was probably at the Looks to Thrill video shoot.
Probably. Looks That Kill. Looks That Kill.
Looks to Kill. Looks to Kill. Looks, looks kill. To Thrill. I like Looks to Thrill.
You're making up new titles.
I like thrilling right. looks.
So now you've also shot them when they start to decline and they're doing like the club tour.
No, not really, because after Vince left the band when they got John Corabi, I really didn't work with them anymore at that point.
Right, but you did at least one shoot in a Motley Crue book that was a later period. Like, is that ever weird? Even, and say for any group that you've shot where, like, you shot them when they were at the top and then they get, like, way smaller. Is that ever, like, weird for you, sort of?
Well, not really, but, you know, some photographers will be like, you know, like, whether they're shooting Motley at the top and then, you know, in the bands, or whether it's Warrant at the top or Poison at the top, and then they come down and they aren't really, their albums stop selling as much and no one wants their photos as much. I've always been like, look, I worked with you and you let me work with you when you were at the top and I made a lot of money and sold a lot of your photos. So just because you may not be at the top of your game now doesn't mean like, oh no, I'm not going to work with you anymore because no one wants your photos because I remember the good and the bad.
Oh, that's cool. So you kept like, say, a loyalty to these groups because they helped you. And then you reach a point where, like, you kind of know you're making more money than the bassist in that band at a certain point. Isn't that possible?
Maybe not necessarily off the band I'm shooting that
band. No, I just meant, like, in a year, you're thinking to yourself, like, wow, I'm actually more famous or I'm making more money in a year.
I never think I'm more famous. That's for people with egos, and I try not to have any ego because that's not good for people to have ego, but a lot of people I deal with have big egos. So.
Right. Oh, yeah, if you're dealing with bands, right? But let's start working closer to the present, right?
Okay.
So digital came around in, say, around 2001. I personally jumped on it as soon as I could because I loved it. I couldn't. As soon as I saw the D1X, I'm like, I got to have this. And I was so happy to go digital. What was your reaction from going from film to digital?
Well, I didn't go digital until about 2005, 2006.
Yeah,
then I didn't go digital to shoot my rock and roll stuff. I went digital to try my hand at shooting some jewelry photography because someone offered me a gig to make a whole lot of money in a short period of time. But, you know, I couldn't do that with the film. It didn't work out. So I was like, you know, I need to buy this digital camera. But that was sort of a whole failure.
What was your aversion to it, though? Why didn't you, like, how come you, like, I looked at, like, this is great. We can see what we're doing. We know what we're doing. We don't have to buy film.
Right.
I just loved it. Well, not having to shoot Polaroids anymore.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's hard teaching an old dog new tricks. So I've been shooting film for a long time. So to me, there was no need to shoot digital, but I found the need was everybody all of a sudden in this day and age wanted everything immediately.
Right.
And next I found while other photographers were shooting digital, they didn't want to pay me for the film and processing when they could get someone else to do the same thing and not have to pay them that $30 a roll for 36 shots.
Yeah, that's sort of the irony is that as much as I love shooting digital, it hurt us in a lot of ways. It hurt us financially, and it hurt us because so many people were able to jump into photography and get a decent photo digitally.
It's weird, right.
You know, even though personally I liked shooting digital.
Right. Well, you know, in the film days, there was none of this. You had to know what you were doing because you couldn't just look on the back of the camera and go, oh, it's too light, let's make it darker. It's too dark, let's make it lighter. You know, you know, I was out once with a photographer, I won't mention his name, and he shot some photos of me somewhere out in the daylight, and he showed them to me. I'm like, dude, the photos are all green. He goes, well, yeah, we'll just fix that later in Photoshop. Right. So he had his camera set on tungsten for an outdoor shoot.
Right. He
didn't know there's, you know, like every light's got a certain Kelvin temperature. Right. You know, they just, another photographer's like, Neil, how do you take a reading when you use, you know, flashes in the studio? I'm like, duh, you use a flash meter.
Right,
you
know? Yeah. There's people, you hold a light meter, they don't even know what it is.
Yeah,
it's
they
amazing.
Don't know what they're, you know,
it's amazing. But going forward again, right? So there's a point where a lot of the groups that you're shooting start to fall a bit. That entire genre of, like, they call it hair metal. It's not a nice term.
Right.
But they start to fall. How much did that affect you in terms of being busy or in terms of what your bank account looked like?
Well, I mean, you know, the hair metal bands went out at the late 80s, early 90s when grunge came in. And that was a pretty, photography-wise, pretty pathetic error because it wasn't cool to be rock stars anymore. So in the 80s, you do a Bon Jovi shoot or a Motley shoot or a Poison shoot or whoever it was, and you could sell it to 40 or 50 different American magazines alone, the same shoot. And the bucks were rolling in. But then, you know, when the 90s came around, it was grunge, and these people would come to your studio. They wouldn't even look at you. They didn't want to be rock stars. So they would just sit there talking with all themselves. They wouldn't even look at you. Yeah. And you had to shoot them while they weren't. I mean, sometimes you get the backs of people's heads. So.
Yeah, every shot back then was like the group is like they're waiting for the bus. Like they can't look at the camera. And the funny thing is it's still an outfit. Like when Kurt Cobain's wearing the dirty sweater and he hasn't washed his hair, it's still an outfit, just like when Motley Crue is wearing like
pink
and
stripes.
Right,
it was just a different type of outlet.
Right.
But, you know, the Motley guys and Bon Jovi's, they'd look in the lens and they'd want to give the rock star pose.
Right.
Like, we're cool, we're tough, we're big rock stars. And, you know, the grunge guys wouldn't look in the lens. They're just, dude, Neil, shoot whatever we're doing. If we're picking our nose, shoot it. If we're you know, scratching our butt, shoot it. We don't care. We don't want to look at you. We don't want to pose like the people of the 80s did.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, they were completely averse to that, which is funny. Now, moving to the present, right? So you formed an agency called Atlas Icons with Eddie Malouk.
Right.
Right. Is that correct? Now, I had gotten approached, actually, because I've known Eddie like 20 years. And then there's another friend that we both have in common, Anthony Cutterjar, who I'm sure you know.
And Tony, I know.
You know, and they kind of spoke to me and said, hey, you know, do you want to show us some stuff and get your archive on there? But the reason I personally didn't is because so much of what I've shot, Tony has shot. Now, Tony has shot a lot of stuff I didn't shoot because he's gotten more groups than me, but like 80% of the groups that I got, Tony got. So I figured, well, what's the point? If it's, you know, it's going to be the same session, it's just different outfits.
Yeah.
So
and Tony's great, too.
Oh,
unfortunately, that's
Tony.
One of our niches, the sort of rap hip-hop as of right now. You know,
That doesn't move as good as the classic rock metal stuff?
I mean, I sort of dug a niche in rock and things like that, even though I've shot country and, you know, I've done some teen things in my earlier days, but, you know, the teen guys don't sell that I shot. That's Leif Garrett, Andy Gibb, Sean Cassidy.
No, they need that behind the music, you know. Those guys, you know, they pull it for that.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess so.
But,
I mean,
so what was the impetus to make you start your agency yourself rather than just put it on Getty or Wire or something?
I mean, to me, the agencies you mentioned basically made photography a disposable commodity as far as I'm concerned. I mean, some of those agencies, one guy told me he's with them, he's like, Neil, I'm with them and I hate them because, but at the end of the month, I'll make $1,000, $2,000, $3,000. He goes, but one of my, you know, my licensing sales on my last sales report was 35 cents.
Yeah, it's serious, seriously. And it was funny because there was a statement. People thought it was a fake letter from Getty, but the letter said something to the effect of when they make payments of like less than a penny, the computer was automatically rounding it down to zero when they weren't making the payments.
Right.
So they're like, well, we're going to start calculating these like micro penny payments to make sure you get the full penny. And people thought it was a joke, and it turned out it wasn't a joke.
Well, the problem is, though, you know, no one's forcing anybody to go to any of these agencies.
Right.
So, you know, it's like if they put their stuff on that agency, I'm not going to mention the agency's name, and the agency sells it for a penny or 10 cents, that's their problem.
Right.
You know, I had a photographer call me up, and she's like, Neil, I got a problem. I'm like, what's that? She goes, I want to read you a sales report from so-and-so, okay?
Right.
Let's see, 50 cents, 50 cents, $1.50, $1.75, $2.50, 50 cents. I'm like, yeah, so what's the problem? And she's like, Neil, they're giving my stuff away. I'm like,
yeah.
Whoever twisted your arm and said you got
to
be
you
with
gave
them.
It to them to give
you
away.
You gave it to them. So, right. I mean, I'll be digging ditches at a construction site before you ever see me doing that with my images and selling stuff. And or the photographers we represent with Atlas Images, you know, or Atlas Icons. Because, you know, I want to keep our photographers' images respected and not treat them as a disposable commodity that you might as well just throw in the trash and they're worthless.
Right.
So we try to get the best photographers we can and try to get real money for their photos.
That's cool. You know? And you know what's funny to me about stock, too, is that years ago, like in the 80s and 90s, stock was like an afterthought. You just kind of dumped whatever on a stock agency, but they were actually getting good rates.
Right.
And now that they don't have good rates, there's a ton of photographers whose only outlet is Getty Images or Wire Image, and they don't have any relationships with magazines or publicists of their own. It's really all just coming through the stock agency, which is weird because the stock agencies aren't paying anything
anymore.
Well,
that's because they're too scared to get on the phone and try to make their own thing. So most photographers... Hold on a second.
Yeah. Take your time.
Give me a second.
I'll try to rant while we do this. But I had this thing on the internet one time where I had shown where, like, I used to be with Retina back in the day, and I showed one month they had sold, it was only like five pictures, and it still added up to like $600. It was just a few shots.
Right.
And you could sell literally 100 pictures now to certain agencies, and you wouldn't approach anywhere near that amount of money because the rates are so different.
Hold on, I got to call this guy.
Yeah, that's fine. Take your time. Take your time. I don't think I can rant any longer than that, you know, but take your time, man. I appreciate it. You're going to do another 5 minutes, you'll be good, okay? Because we moved to the present, which is, I wanted to get to that.
What are you girls looking at the book? Well, Maggie's telling me something now. Let me see what's up.
Okay, take your time.
Hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? Where are you?
Yeah.
What's it called? Do you know Houndstooth Pub, 37th and 8th?
Yeah.
That should be right here.
Is that place good?
We're at 38th and 8th.
Maggie said the menu looks good. I'm coming back with you tonight, correct? Oh, you just said no. So a couple hours, right? Hour and a half, right? I'm going to go with this. John's finishing up an interview. I'm going to go eat with Nayoung and Stella, grab a fast drink. I can use one after that, and I'll call you when I'm done. Okay, cool. Just be around. Don't go back without me. What?
When
10 o'clock, 10:15. We'll go watch that movie when we get back to your house. Unless you want to go to sleep. Okay, bye. Okay,
just gonna run through a couple more minutes.
Okay.
So, but we were just saying, so I think it's fantastic that you're working to make sure that people get the right money for photos.
I'm trying because I have to turn down offers all the time for people. We just had someone in Europe call up Eddie. We're doing a full page coffee book. Metallica book, and we want photos from early their career, like 83, 84. Well, those aren't the easiest to get.
Right.
We have those on Atlas Icons. So I told Eddie, email them and find out how much they're paying.
Right.
Oh, well, we're getting photos for $10 and $15 from photographers. I'm like, Eddie, ask the guy, are they on drugs or what?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's insane, especially for early stuff, because everybody's got the last tour, but
Everybody's
who's got the Kill 'Em All tour?
Yeah, I mean, I started in 86, but I have a photographer who's got Backstage and Live from 1983, so.
Right, it's a whole different world, whatever. Now, this is the question that I get asked occasionally, and I find it's impossible to answer. Someone will say, how do I get started in entertainment photography today? And I usually say, it's so different now than when I started. It's hard to give advice. But how do you answer that same question?
Honestly, I tell them to find a different field to go into. I mean, photography in this day and age is a disposable commodity. Right. No one cares. If you came up to me 15 years ago and said, Neil, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a photographer. Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was special.
Yeah, what do you shoot? Oh, I'm in the music industry. Oh, Neil, that's cool. You get that. Now, if someone says, what do you do for a living? I go, I'm a photographer. They're like, we're photographers. We got iPhones too. You know, it's like, it doesn't mean anything. And anybody can buy a Canon 5D like I have and shoot pretty good photos.
Yeah.
Not necessarily great,
right?
But then they could spend hours in Photoshop if they know what they're doing and try to make them great.
And I always find it weird, like if you say to someone, like if you go, I'm a photographer, and then like some girl goes like, yeah, my boyfriend's a photographer. And then let's say in today's case, you just finished shooting an ad. Frankie Bello was one of the people there from Anthrax. And if you said, I shot Frankie Bello, like that girl will go, yeah, my boyfriend shot him. But she's talking about like a concert or a red carpet. You're like, no, I had this guy in my studio for 2 hours.
Right.
It's a whole different world, but there's no respect for the difference between like an event or having that real session with
well,
the artist.
Well, I mean, you know, to me, red carpet stuff, that's not even photography. That's all, you know, automated flash, autofocus, auto exposure.
Right.
There's a need for it,
right.
But you got 200 photographers all vying for the same shots of Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie.
And it doesn't matter who they send, because if they're calling an agency saying, hey, you want to send a shooter, it doesn't matter. No, the publicist isn't saying, did you send Bob or did you send Tom?
Right, yeah. Just,
nobody cares, because anybody can take the red carpet picture.
No one cares. Anymore, if you ask me. I mean, I live in LA. Here we are sitting in your studio in Manhattan.
Right.
I have my clients that actually fly me out. Like, there's a shortage of photographers in New York.
No one could have shot this in New York.
Yeah, right. No one else but me in the whole world could have. So they had to fly me out.
That always makes me laugh whenever I get a trip. I put that on my Twitter like every time because it is funny. But it's really, in reality, it should be that way.
Well, you saw me working. You see what I do. And
you shot, what was it? I guess it was 3 bass players. Yeah. Every one of them walked in and gave you a hug and they knew you. And they loved you.
Not
and they
everyone.
Know
I never worked with Will Lee before. You know, I know Victor and Frankie.
But that reputation still precedes you at least.
I don't think Will knows who I am.
Nah, I bet they do. I bet they know. I think it's good when that happens, but it is a little funny on a personal level. You're like, you say you're in New York City. No one could have shot this but me. But hey, as long as that lasts, it's great. Let's hope it keeps going.
You know what? I mean, honestly, I have my clients that appreciate me.
Right.
My main concern and interest in this day and age is to work on Atlas icons. I mean, every day in my studio, I'm scanning photos at night. I FTP them to my home computer, and I sit there at night, usually drinking wine, listening to music, of course.
Right.
And I get rid of dust marks, scratches, fingerprints,
light
and dark, and raise contrast to every single shot. There is one shot that goes on Atlas icons of mine that I don't at least open up and look for flaws and defects.
That's cool. But are you able to generate like a sizable part of your income from the archive as opposed to work you're doing today?
Before we started Atlas Icons, I was talking to Eddie one day, my partner. I'm like, Eddie, how's your stock sales photos? And he's like, mediocre.
Right.
And I would open up magazines and see photos of Steve I or Eddie Van Halen. I go, they don't even call me.
Right.
Because I was used to dealing the old-fashioned way, not the way that they do it in this day and age.
Right.
So, you know, I was living in the old, like I learned from my buddy Buddha. Everything changes, nothing stays the same.
And you got to change with it.
So, you know, I mean, I've had to reinvent myself. When grunge came in and my business sort of went down the tubes, I had to reinvent myself, which I've done quite a bit.
And that's what you're doing today with the archive.
Yeah, the archives. I'm reinventing myself.
And it's funny for me on a personal level because my archive is not anywhere. I was with Retina from about like 95 to, I don't know, maybe 2005 or something. Very long time, like 20 years. And at some point when they had problems with a lot of photographers who wanted to be removed from Retina, Retina deleted me from their archive without me telling them to. So everything that I had for like 20 years of archives on Retina is just no longer serviced by Retina at all.
Right. Well, you know, I won't mention anything, but they have a reputation of not paying their photographers.
Right. And a lot of guys said, get me off your site. I never said it, so I mean, at least I could have got my scans back.
Well, you should be able to still.
No, I don't even know where it is. It's probably just deleted. And Retina, I think, is like one guy now or something.
Well, they've changed hands. So, I don't pay attention to the
you don't need to.
And the
You're
Retinas.
Running your own
I got my Atlas icon.
Which is the way it should be. So I think that's really cool, man. And I wish you like all the best of luck with Atlas icons and everything you're working on at present. And like I said, as somebody who started my photography as a fan and a hobbyist, you know, to have these people whose work I would look at, and you are one of them. Like I said, I know specific shots you did and certain things you had shot, and I'd just be like, damn. And you don't like, you almost get mad at the guy. You probably have had that, right? You look at a magazine and you're like, fuck, like this guy's stuff is so good. And in those early days, especially, like I couldn't get my color right. You know, you couldn't get your focus right. I'm looking at your work going like, how the fuck does this guy do that?
Well, you know, it's funny. I look at some of the Atlas icons guys we have and go, these guys are good, or girls, right. Tamara, and go, wow, these people are really good. It's like, I don't need to go out and shoot live stuff anymore because their stuff's so good, and I don't want to do that.
You don't want to be out at 3 a.m. now.
Well, I don't want to be in the photo scum pit at some show getting kicked in the head or whatever, getting spit on, and you know. Right.
Yeah, you don't need it. You've done it anyway.
I've
and you've done it with some of the best of the best out there.
Yeah,
so
I paid my
cool
dues,
that?
I like to
That's
think.
That's super
so.
Cool. So I am really glad to have met you and to meet you and have you be such a cool guy. I
and
like
use
you
your studio,
I met
too.
You. Yeah, that was great. So from the moment you walked in and started saying hi, I liked you right away. So that's super cool. And you work with Eddie. And like I said, I've known Eddie at least 20 years.
Okay,
I've always loved Eddie, always been cool with Eddie. So I really wish you the best of luck with everything you're working on in the present. And you know, I hope to see you back here again.
Cool.
Man.
I'll be back. And thanks, John, for having me. And it was fun doing the interview.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll do the podcast again next time you come out, even if you're not doing
fine.
A studio thing.
I don't know
thing.
What it'll
just
be. Next time Maggie flies me out.
Let's do it. All right. Beautiful.
It,
thank you. And where do they find you, by the way? You on Twitter, Instagram, anything
no,
like
I'm
that?
No, I'm not on any of that stuff. I hate Facebook, hate Twitter, hate LinkedIn. I don't even know what Instagram is.
Right.
That's not me.
I hate them too, but I'm on all of those.
Yeah.
Okay. But we can find you. All we got to do is look up Atlas Icons, and we can see some amazing shots. That go to the present and go all the way back to that classic era.
I think there's
of
some stuff there from 69-70.
Yeah, some amazing stuff. And then, like I said, you've got some books out there too, so they can find you. Neil Zlozauer.
That's
so cool,
right.
Man.
See y'all later.
All right, thanks a lot, man.
Thanks,
all right,
John.
Bye-bye.
Okay, good.
Oh, that was amazing, man.